Thank you. Please be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Dillard versus Texas Electric.
Oh, may it please the court. Oh, Mr. Blitzoff will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The lower court opinion that is under review here is exceptionally ill-conceived and poorly reasoned. Left to stand, it will turn East Texas into Alice's Wonderland, a place where trial by imagination rules and where there are no standards of proof for conduct or proximate cause. The opinion is a disaster for ranchers and other animal owners because it assumes a new duty to enclose livestock, contrary to statute, but worse.
But it doesn't say there's any liability for that duty.
Excuse me?
It doesn't say there's any liability for that.
No, Your Honor, it doesn't, but if you can presume my conduct, then it's not far to presume my negligence, especially if a presumption of conduct carries with it the certain knowledge that if cattle get out, they might get to a rut.
But conduct doesn't have anything to do with sole proximate cause.
Yes, ma'am, it does. If you read this instruction, it says the act or omission of a person.
It doesn't say failure to act reasonably, or it doesn't
right.
Qualify that. It doesn't say it has to be reasonable.
That's correct, and that's an odd question about that instruction, isn't it? Because proximate cause in and of itself, the definition of proximate cause implies that what an ordinary person of ordinary prudence could foresee. And if you can foresee an injury and you're a person of ordinary prudence, then that's almost the same as negligence. But I'm not arguing that negligence is required for a sole proximate cause instruction, but an act or omission is required for sole proximate cause by the very definition of it. The instruction inquires about a person's act or omission that proximately caused an accident. And the definition of proximately caused is what could a reasonable, prudent person foresee. This opinion proceeds on the assumption that that conduct existed, contrary to this court's prior announcements. It says that the mere presence of cows on a road leads to a presumption of conduct, act or omission. Admittedly, Your Honor, not of negligence, but certainly a presumption of some conduct. And that's contrary to what I think the cases have always said in Texas about proving conduct. As a matter of fact, the Tyler Court in recent years declared a new common law duty to enclose livestock, but in 1999, this court reversed that in Gibbs versus Jackson. In spite of that, however, this opinion still operates on the assumption of a duty on the part of livestock owners to fence them in, to enclose them, to keep them off of the highway.
Not a duty. Just it depends upon there being an owner to have act or omitted.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I think what you're saying, it depends upon there being an owner to have done some act or to have omitted some act. Doesn't matter whether they had a duty to.
Again, and I need to.
In other words, we don't need to
go
judge
there to argue this case, but if you say omission, an omission by definition is the failure to do something that a person has a duty to do. Granted, the courts of appeals, although I can't find a case where this court's ever said it, don't require negligence. But if you say that an omission to be a sole proximate cause can be anything I imagine, each of us is sitting here omitting to do several things as we speak, many of which can cause injury to other people. If there's no duty, then why isn't it the sole proximate cause of this accident that the state didn't build a 30-foot wall between these two lanes of traffic so that when Ms. Brown hit the cow, she hit the wall instead of hitting Mr. Dillard? What about the pup truck that came through the scene and was the one that bumped dead after he hit the dead cow? He didn't stop to warn. He had no duty to do so. Would his failure to stop to warn and be a potential sole proximate cause of these injuries?
I think we understand your point. Let's move on and assume that there's some third party that did have a duty and they failed to comply with that duty, and that may have been a part of this accident. When and when not, in your opinion, should a trial judge give a sole proximate cause instruction? instruction, and when is it error to guess the wrong way?
Well, it's error to give it if you don't have some evidence of a person who committed an act or omission, but more importantly, some evidence of foreseeability. There are several reasons why this instruction would have been error to give. First, all of the reasoning in the Court of Appeals opinion starts with the cows on the road. But you must start with the particular conduct that we're assuming occurred that had to have happened before the cows got there. There must be foreseeability to that owner from some particular conduct, even if not negligent, that the cows could escape. We don't know if these cows got
there. Pretty easy to foresee.
That the cows could escape?
Yeah.
Well, it is easy to foresee in the abstract, just like it's easy to foresee death, taxes, and a lot of other things in life, but not the type of foreseeability that this court has routinely required for proximate cause. Well, you can foresee it in the abstract, but let's say your cow is inside a fence, inside your pasture, and in order for that cow to get out, it must traverse five fences or break down three gates.
Coming to the chief's question, though, if the owner had just been standing there and decided, well, he needed to move the cattle from one side to the other side, now's as good a time as any, and so he opened the gate and sent them across the road, would that be a time to give a sole proximate cause instruction?
Well, not in this case, because in this case...
We're not asking about this case.
Excuse me?
It's a whole nother case. It's a busy state highway.
I hope Your Honor's not asking me if I like inferential rebuttal issues altogether. Because certainly
to follow our law in those few cases where there's a majority opinion. And the judge's question is, if you open the highway and just let some cattle out, then is it error? But for some reason, you're not brought into the case. Your judgment proof or a friend of the plaintiff or whatever. Is it error for the trial judge not to give a sole proximate cause instruction?
If there's conduct, it's known. If there's foreseeability from that conduct that the cows would arrive at the highway, and if we presume that inferential rebuttal instructions are appropriate, then I suppose so.
Let me ask you this, though. If you, same question, but if you do give an unavoidable accident instruction that says it may be an unavoidable accident if it's caused by an event not proximately caused by the negligence of any party to it, couldn't a jury, unavoidable accident in our cases says it's non-human events, but nothing in this instruction says non-human events, right?
Sure.
So why would a jury be misled by this unavoidable accident? They couldn't consider the possibility that somebody negligently let the cattle out.
Notice I didn't say reversible error. I think your prior decisions, given those facts, would require the giving of the instruction, but when you give the unavoidable accident instruction, and it says these could be events not caused by parties negligence, not proximately caused by parties negligence, that means exactly the same thing as saying somebody else caused it. There's a Court of Appeals opinion I cited to you that says an unavoidable accident instruction about human conduct has the same effect as a sole proximate cause instruction. The basis of our argument in this case hasn't been that since there was an unavoidable accident instruction, he wasn't entitled to sole proximate cause. I think that's contrary to your prior decisions. I think if the facts called for it, he would be entitled to it. But where we are is the trial judge said the facts don't call for it. He didn't disclose it. He didn't offer any proof of it. I'm not going to give it. So the question is, was that an abuse of discretion on the trial judge's part? Even if you assume some evidence, or if the court decides to change the law and create a presumption of conduct from the mere presence of animals on a roadway, there's still not reversible error because there's not any real difference in the meaning to a jury. Juries don't know that this court said let's only give unavoidable accident when there's non-human conduct or a child, or maybe the court has said an incompetent person. Juries don't know that. They're just reading it. The question is answered yes or no. It says negligence, if any. And the instruction went further to say this could have been an accident caused, an event not caused by a party's negligence. A sole proximate cause instruction would not have added anything to this jury's understanding in this case, and certainly, given the overwhelming evidence in this case, would not have resulted in a different judgment.
Counsel, quick question.
Logically, if there's some evidence, go ahead.
I have a quick question about Ms. Brown.
Yes, ma'am.
You, in your couple of your footnotes in your reply brief, you talk about what occurred during the charge conference. and that the defendant said, we're only talking about the cows on the road, not Mrs. Brown. Was that recorded somewhere? Because your site is not to the record.
It's not recorded, and we did. That's a bystander's bill that I referenced that's attached to our Court of Appeals brief. The charge conference was not recorded, but you don't have to go there. Here's what he said in his opening statement about May Brown. I think that once you've considered the evidence, you're going to see that the individuals involved in this accident were just flat all in the wrong place at the wrong time, and none of them were at fault in causing this accident because the cows, for some reason, were out on the road. Some reason. Not because of anything an owner did, but for some reason. And he'd already named May Brown as one of the parties involved. And then in his closing argument, he says this, and you know what? I don't think Mr. Dillard, I don't think May Joyce Brown, and I don't think that Stephen Bumstead or TDC was at fault in causing this accident. They were all in the wrong place at the wrong time. What caused this accident? Cows out on the road. Cows out on the road. Not an owner herded his cows out on the road. Not an owner was negligent in his enclosure like they pled. But the cows were on the road. The only evidence in this case of conduct is cow conduct. We know the cows walked onto the road. That's it. We know nothing about anything that an owner did or did not do whatsoever. And cow conduct is sure non-human conduct, and it is a stretch to say that the trial judge abused his discretion when he gave the unavoidable accident instruction. Your Honor, any questions?
Yes. Going back a few minutes, logically, why is it error for a trial judge not to submit a sole proximate charge instruction, a sole proximate cause instruction, if there is some evidence of more than one party being involved or causing the accident? I'm questioning the fundamental
philosophically,
and possibly questioning some of our prior precedents. Why should a trial judge, if asked, have to give a sole proximate cause instruction if there's evidence, some evidence, that more than one person may have caused the accident?
Well, I think the rationale that the courts have given, am I supposed to stop speaking at this point?
No, you're supposed to talk.
I think the rationale that the courts have given is that perhaps the jury won't understand that they can say no. Perhaps we need to draw their attention to this other party who the evidence has raised.
And I think that would make sense if the wording of the charge instruction said, I think that might make sense if the wording of the instruction said that, but I don't think it says anything close to that. In this case, was May Brown sued?
She was a plaintiff in this lawsuit.
I'm sorry, was Maxwell sued?
No, and he was not involved. The reason nobody talks about him, he didn't hit anything until after Kenneth Dillard had already been hit and killed. He was behind Mr. Dillard, and after Ms. Brown hit Mr. Dillard, Mr. Maxwell then ran into, I think, Ms. Brown, and she's not a party to the loss, and that's why it just didn't come up anywhere in the briefs in this matter.
And you said May Brown was a plaintiff?
May Brown was a plaintiff and settled.
She settled before trial?
Yes, sir.
And she sued Texas Electric Cooperative in Bumstead, or did the defendants bring her in?
No, she sued Texas Electric Cooperative in Bumstead.
And you did not sue her?
No.
Billy. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court, old Mr. Brad Dickinson will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. If I may begin by addressing the response that Mr. Saad made to a question raised by Justice Owen. With regard to the charge conference and statements that were made, that, and he referenced an appendix to an appellant's brief in that, and that needs some clarification in this court, because that's, one, not in the record and disputed. They did attempt to create a bystander's bill in the Court of Appeals, as he referenced. What he failed to mention was, we disagreed with that, filed a motion with the court to permit us to either, one, file a controverting affidavit, disputing it entirely, or to strike it, and the Court of Appeals struck the affidavit that he is now relying upon
but
in this court.
But you'd agree with the substance. I mean, no testimony came in at trial as to anything about who owned the cows or what they may or may not have done.
I will agree that there was no direct evidence, yes, Your Honor, at all at trial about who the owner was. The only evidence on that issue was the fact that they were owned by someone. They had generic ear tags indicating ownership from the cattle.
That came into the testimony at trial?
Yes.
It strikes me that the unavoidable accident instruction, and let me simplify this in my mind, is unavoidable accident means nobody's fault. Sole proximate cause means somebody else's fault.
I think that's a fair basic distinction between the two.
Okay. So if it's nobody's fault, then what difference does it matter if it's somebody else's fault?
Well, and perhaps I should clarify, a party to the accident, to the suit, is what I believe, and perhaps I misunderstood the first part of your question. I mean, this court has, if the court is saying today, or says in this case, that there is no difference of consequence, that sole proximate cause is somehow subsumed within the definition of unavoidable accident.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't understand why it's not in this case, because your argument is premised on the notion that unavoidable accident has to relate to non-human conduct, right?
That is generally what it is right. considered to be.
But if it relates to arguably human conduct, just if that's the case, then isn't sole proximate cause superfluous?
No, we don't believe so, especially in the context of this case and the way they presented their theory of the case to the jury. It is somewhat convoluted in the facts, Your Honor, but they have taken alternative positions that there was either one accident or two accidents. Were we negligent in striking the cow or failing to miss the cow? And then were we later negligent in failing to warn? They have, and there's numerous references to these two separate accidents. So to that extent, an unavoidable accident would apply to this first accident. However, with regard to the second one, the second accident, then, which is actually the facts of this case, are that he struck a cow, pulled off to where he could
right,
have been safe.
But your sole proximate cause instruction only relates to the second piece?
Only to the first.
First piece.
No, Your Honor.
Well, who else's fault could it be that he didn't properly warn?
May Brown.
She kept him in the truck? Don't you get out of that truck and warn anybody. Don't you get out of that truck and clean up the mess you made.
Well, no, Your Honor, and that's not the position we're taking. But what they have said, and there was evidence to this effect, that unlike the circumstances, that were presented to him, she was coming from the opposite direction. There was testimony that he left his lights on.
Well, you're saying she was negligent. Is that your position?
I'm saying that she could have been considered to be negligent, or just her conduct in striking a cow in the road.
If your position is she was negligent, you're required to do comparative responsibility, aren't you? Even if she's not, you're required to submit that to the jury.
She's Sam Settler in the PJC.
I don't believe I'm required to, Your Honor. I don't think that.
Well, you're not entitled to a sole proximate cause instead of submitting Sam Settler's name, are you?
Well, I am actually unaware of anything which requires me, if I'm just saying, as they took the position in this case, that her conduct caused the accident, whether it was negligent or not.
Well, that's what I want to inquire. It seems to me you've got to decide whether you're going to say she was negligent or not. If you're saying she's negligent, it seems to me you've got to submit that comparative responsibility. If you're saying her conduct caused it, as sole proximate cause, but was not negligent, then it seems to me that the unavoidable accident squarely addressed that. It says, an event not proximately caused by the negligence of any party to it, which would include Mrs. Brown. So it seems to me like you're covered if your position is Ms. Brown was not negligent, but it was her conduct that caused the second accident.
Well, and Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I do believe that her conduct, assuming it's not negligence, which is what they argue, but taking the police officer's report of action on faulty action on her part, her failure to see a cow traveling at 35 to 40 miles per hour on level land, that conduct, not negligent, but conduct, could have been a sole proximate cause.
Did you argue that?
I beg your pardon?
Did you argue that at closing argument?
Well, actually, Your Honor, I was appellate counsel only. But yes, contrary to what they were saying, there were references in the closing arguments to conduct on the part of Ms. Brown.
Right, so you could, but you could only be harmed by the judge didn't give us an instruction if you try to make the argument and the other side objects, there's no basis for that in a charge, and the judge sustains it. Nothing like that happened.
Well, they didn't object to it. But right. We could still be harmed by failing to receive the sole proximate cause, in our opinion.
Isn't what you're saying, okay, if it's sole proximate cause, that means caused by another person. Unavoidable accident, that's caused by another non-person. Act of God, that's caused by God. And why do we care whether the cows got on the road because of another person or another non-person or God let them out? Why do we want the jury spending any time figuring that out? None of those people are liable.
Well, to make sure, in the context of a sole proximate cause.
You should have given this one rather than that one. What your argument is we want the jury to decide whether these cows got out because of the weather or because somebody let them out. And my question is, who cares? Why do we want a jury to decide that?
Well, because in the context of a sole proximate cause instruction, which, unlike the unavoidable accident instruction pursuant to prior pronouncements of this court, the purpose of the sole proximate cause instruction is to focus the jury's attention that actions or conduct of some other human may destroy the causal connection or may be the cause of this accident.
Counsel, what one person was the sole proximate cause of this accident?
I beg your pardon?
What one person was the sole proximate cause of this accident? 100% responsible.
Well, I think
pick one.
Pick one?
One. You're saying you are harmed by failure to give a sole proximate cause instruction.
Yes.
What one person was the sole proximate cause?
I think
of
the primary.
Nope. Sole proximate cause instruction says an act or omission of a person, not a party to the lawsuit, is the sole proximate cause of the occurrence. Not primary, not mostly, sole.
I would say that is the owner of the cattle.
And May Brown's conduct was not responsible at all?
I think that a jury could have found that depending upon what version of the facts they decided to accept. A jury could have disagreed with me and concluded that May Brown was, in fact, the sole cause of this second accident.
So now you've told me there are two persons that are responsible, May Brown and the cow's owners. What I don't understand is how you say you're harmed by failure to submit a sole proximate cause instruction when you acknowledge that there's more than one person responsible for this accident.
Well, I believe this court...
Maybe that's the problem with the instruction rather than your position, or maybe both. But I have a fundamental question about that.
Well, if it's somebody else's fault, I'd certainly accept that judge. But I believe that, as I understand your question, this court has previously ruled in the, the Schumacher versus Holcomb case, that a party is entitled to advance inconsistent and alternative theories. And in fact, in that case, approved the submission of sole proximate cause and unavoidable accident, and expressly rejected. In fact, the Court of Appeals said were both sole proximate cause and unavoidable accident. And I'll tell the court now, I do not recall the specifics. It was not an animal on the roadway case. But the Court of Appeals said that were both sole proximate cause and unavoidable accident are raised by the same pleadings and evidence, you get to submit one but not both. And this court said we disagree with that.
I understand. If in a trial the evidence hashes out such that there are three defendants and each is a third responsible, is a sole proximate cause instruction required to be given by the judge if requested?
If there are three defendants, I think under the instruction as it is worded at the present time in the pattern jury charge, and as this court has discussed it in, for instance, the Yarborough case.
Yes?
No, you would not be entitled to.
When would you
must be a, it must be someone who is not a party to the lawsuit.
Okay.
And if it's only the three defendants.
Ms. Brown was a party, you say?
No.
Not at the time of trial.
So then if you have.
In fact, I'm
just amending the hypothetical. So if you have a defendant who was involved in the accident and is at trial, and then two persons who were involved in the accident but are not at trial, and there's some evidence that all three of these persons, one a defendant, two not parties, had some involvement with the accident, is a sole proximate cause instruction required?
If I understand your hypothetical correctly, Your Honor, yes, I would agree. There were two persons who were involved in the accident and their conduct, there were allegations that their conduct may have contributed to it. Yes, I think the jury should be entitled to determine under the current state of Texas law whether the actions of one of the other two people, actions or conduct,
was the sole
proximate cause of the accident.
That makes sense to you, counsel?
Yes.
Okay. What evidence is there that the owner was negligent? I mean,
I beg your pardon?
What evidence is there that the owner of the cattle was negligent? I mean, see, you're only entitled to the instruction that's raised by the pleas and the evidence.
Yes.
What evidence is there that the owner of these cattle was negligent?
There is no direct evidence in the record of any conduct on the part of the cattle owner because we could not locate it.
So you're saying if I own cattle, which I'm glad I don't, and they're on a road, that's kind of res ipsa loquitur of my negligence?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying there is a presumption of human conduct, or should be a presumption or an inference of human conduct.
And that would be enough to get to the jury, if that's all you had. The cattle are mine, they're on the road.
I think under
that's
the
like you introduce those two facts and rest, you get a jury trial?
Well, I think that under the court's question, no, just that no.
However, what else did you have here, I think?
Well,
we
had something showing that these cattle were owned, that there were fences around the area where this happened. Those are in the photographs. That the weather was good at the time. Under those circumstances, showing that there was cattle were owned by somebody, that it was the jury was told that by plaintiff's counsel, we wanted to find them because we want to find out what happened, how their cattle got there.
But cattle can get on the road without the owner doing anything. I mean, we do know that.
That's possible,
so
especially in a free-range area.
Well, even when they're fenced, I mean, cattle have a way of getting out. Well, even when the owners put up good fences, I mean, some cattle have the ability to open a gap for
sure.
Some of it.
But under that same scenario, Your Honor, I think that there could be an inference that if your cattle can walk through the fence, then you did something wrong in not making sure that you had a better fence. And I realize that can be taken to a number of levels, but we just believe that if, in fact, cattle are on a U.S. highway, such as this, in that area, as reflected in the pictures and the evidence, that there is an inference that conduct on the part of a human being permitted the cattle to be there.
Now, I have another question that's just going to be helpful to me. It won't help the court, but how are these instructions, unavoidable accident, act of God, sole proximate cause, different from the comments on the evidence that we disapproved in General Motors versus Accord? I mean, what does this add to the jury trial since they're free already under the basic instructions and questions they have to find no negligence on any of the parties in the case?
Well, since the General Motors versus Accord case, I do believe that this court has specifically addressed.
Oh, well, we have, but I just didn't understand their opinions. Maybe you can make it clearer what the court, what the basis for the court's rationale.
Well, I think the basis for the court's rationale, and I certainly don't want to presume to speak for your brethren on the court, is that every party is entitled to submission of these specific issues. In fact, I think the rationale for it being that it is something that has been used, it permits a party to say, well, you don't have to, not only can you find that these two people involved in this accident aren't at fault, but you know, you can find that the actions or conduct of some other party was involved. And I believe Justice, some of the rationale for it may be reflected in Justice Heck's dissenting opinion, I believe it was Reinhart, in which he discussed the history of these different types of instructions and how, with the development of time, they have been retained by the courts, especially in a broad form submission, where you can tell the jury, okay, just because we're going to give you a broad form, there are these other considerations. And if that is a party's defensive theory that they're entitled consider that.
I would like to know how you were harmed by the absence of a sole proximate cause instruction, given the unavoidable accident instruction.
Well, Your Honor,
it may have been no one's fault but the party in effect. I mean, couldn't the jury have just looked at that unavoidable accident instruction the same way they would have considered a sole proximate cause instruction?
I don't believe so under the rationale of this court's prior opinions in discussing the significant differences between unavoidable accidents.
The kind of differences that we don't tell the jury anyway.
Right? Pardon?
It's the kind of significant differences that we don't instruct the jury on anyway. The human versus non-human conduct. There's none of that in the instruction in unavoidable accident, for example.
Well, that's true. But
so how could, just as a practical matter, how are you harmed by the absence of an instruction on sole proximate cause, given the jury was provided the unavoidable accident?
Because we do not believe that the unavoidable accident instruction, in and of itself, as written, is sufficient to submit a defendant's primary or predominant defensive theory to the jury of saying, you may consider the actions of someone not a party to the lawsuit in determining specifically between cause, because I believe the unavoidable accident instruction says an accident may be unavoidable, that is, not proximately caused by the negligence of any party to it, but the sole proximate cause instruction, on the other hand, doesn't reference negligence. It talks about conduct. So the difference, a key distinction between the two, is that sole proximate cause informs the jury that non-negligence, just conduct on the part of a party, can be the sole cause of an accident.
You know, if the case had been, here's my problem, or my question. There's evidence of negligence, or at least conduct, of more than one person that could have caused this. So it's in your theory of the case was just that. It could have been this confluence. If you had targeted and said, no, all along, it's this one person, it's that person's conduct, non-negligent conduct that caused this, I might see where you'd have a strong argument that, yes, I want to focus the jury on this wholly intervening sole cause. But here, you were saying, well, it's this, this, and this, and you got the unavoidable accident instruction that says it could be an event not proximately caused by the negligence of any party to it. So that seems to me to cover your position in this case, because you didn't take the position that, no, it's this sole cause to the exclusion of my negligence.
They didn't take the, and again, it's my understanding from trial counsel that the case progressed between was there one accident or was there two accidents, as I indicated a moment ago. They did take the position
looking
in closing
argument. Looking solely at the second accident.
I beg your pardon?
Looking solely at the second accident, it seems to me that throughout the trial, the defendant took the position that there was at least a confluence of events that wasn't anybody's fault. But they didn't focus in on it was this sole proximate cause.
Well, I think he took alternative positions. For instance, in closing statements, he made comments about, in discussing the conduct of Ms. Brown, over and above what was referenced by counsel of, one, what the conduct of Ms. Brown, did she hit a second cow, because there was an issue between one or two dead cows on the road, and that what logic in there is that he should have avoided it, but she shouldn't have with regard to the second accident. And the quote was, they tell you, the plaintiff's counsel, she's not at fault, but Bumstead is. Where's the logic in that? I mean, he was making the argument that with regard to that second accident, it to the extent it was two separate accidents, that it was her conduct.
Well, is there anywhere in the record that shows you argued with the trial court? I thought you told us a while ago that you were contending it was the owner of the cattle's fault, not Brown's. I mean, again, no. You're saying it's either Brown or...
May I respond?
Yes.
What I was saying earlier in response to a question from Justice Wainwright was, if I was forced to pick one, but a jury may be forced to pick one or they may pick none. I was saying, if I had to pick one, yes, I would use the cow owner's conduct. However, if the jury believed that there were two separate accidents, a jury, and that the second accident was the one in which Mr. Dillard was killed, a jury is entitled to say, well, no, with regard to that circumstance, we believe that May Brown's conduct
It seems to me that unavoidable accident covers Mayor Brown. If it, doesn't, you should have asked for a comparative fault question.
Well,
that's where I...
Did you ask that May Brown be submitted in the charge?
No.
Did you ask that the owner of the cow be submitted in the charge?
That I do not recall.
What about Maxwell, the driver behind
no.
Miller? Did you ask that
no,
he
there,
be
there was no contention that at trial from either party, I believe, that Mr. Maxwell's fault, conduct, the intoxication, contributed to Mr. Dillard's injuries as opposed to the injuries suffered by Ms. Brown.
So at trial, the defense was the empty chair defense. Maybe one or two empty chairs were responsible.
Essentially, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
If I might, just to respond to that last question, at trial, the theory was nobody was at fault. Never at trial was any argument made that May Brown was at fault. The argument the counsel referenced was, I'm in the same boat with poor Ms. Brown. She wasn't at fault, and I'm not at fault. None of us could see these dark cows. The problem with that argument was she had one dead cow laying on the road. He had a herd of cows he saw from 1,750 feet away. Big difference, but that was the pitch. The pitch was never that May Brown was at fault. He told the jury in the beginning of the trial and at the end of the trial, she wasn't at fault. Nobody was at fault. It was the cows that caused the accident. And if that's your theory, unavoidable accident is your instruction. Never, not one time, cited in the brief in Court of Appeals opinion or anywhere, was any mention of the cow's owner or anything he or she or it did or did not do ever. The first time there was a theory that, well, maybe it was him and maybe it was her, was on this appeal. The trial theory was the cows caused this. We, me and poor old Miss Brown and poor old Mr. Dillard, couldn't avoid what these cows did.
But what argument did they use to the trial court to support this sole proximate cause instruction? That they did rely on the owner.
Well, of course, I gave you the bystander's bill. They told the judge it's cow conduct that we think we're entitled to, and we read it and said, judge, it says a person, and the judge says, I'm not going to give you that. And you don't have to believe my bystander's bill that they objected to, though. That's what he told them in the opening statement, and that's what he told the judge in the closing argument.
Well, we really shouldn't be looking at closing argument, should we? Because he didn't get the instruction. I mean, I wouldn't argue the sole proximate cause if I didn't get the instruction.
Sure, you wouldn't argue sole proximate cause, but if you had an argument that May Brown caused anything, it still fit under unavoidable accident. He was as free as a bird to say, you know, May Brown is not a party, and if you think she caused this, this was an unavoidable accident. He argued an unavoidable accident directly, but he only argued it about the cows, not the cow owner, not May Brown. He had every reason in the world to argue that May Brown was at fault, if that's what he thought. That wasn't the way this lawsuit was tried. I felt like I'd woken up in Wonderland when I read the appellate brief. This lawsuit was tried about these cows were in the way and they caused this whole thing. And we've got an appeal going on about whether May Brown or an unknown mystery cow owner committed some mystery conduct that caused this accident.
If there had been evidence of the owner's conduct, would a sole proximate cause instruction have been appropriate?
Your Honor, to answer that question to you and to answer the earlier question, is it proper to give an inferential rebuttal instruction or when would it be? Let me just say this. I can imagine, if you're ever going to have them, that it would be in a case where there was strong evidence of an outside party involved in the deal and some reason that the trial judge felt like there was potential confusion and that that instruction was necessary. Maybe a person who was not a party but was arguably an agent or was somebody that the jury might confusingly lump in with a defendant. And the court felt like it was necessary to quote a very learned justice's statement. If I brought it with me here in the dissent of Hill versus Winn-Dixie, if what the trial judge did here constituted an abuse of discretion, then that discretion is very small indeed. Fashioning a jury charge cannot be so tightly circumscribed, not only, I almost said circumcised, circumscribed not only as a matter of law, but as a matter of sheer practicality. Is there ever a situation when a trial judge ought to give a sole proximate cause instruction or act of God or an avoidable accident? I'm not prepared to stand here, and I surely don't feel I need to win this appeal and say never. But maybe we could avoid a lot of confusion if you just write out beside yes or no, put one of those red circles with a slash through it, and wrote just say no, to be sure they understand that. Because that's really all that any of those instructions do is say, he didn't. You don't have to find that he caused this accident, the defendant. But it's sure outside the realm of reason, seems to me, to say that there's prejudicial error would have changed the outcome of this lawsuit under this record when the only witness they called lied about everything he said, except he admitted he saw the cows from the top of the hill, 1,750 feet away. To say that this is reversible error with that unavoidable action instruction when their only argument throughout the trial was the cows were the cause. The cow, none of us people, just the cow. Your Honors, I would love to go through the Court of Appeals opinion with you. The sole proximate cause focus in this appeal is purely an animal of appeal and not an animal that occurred during this trial. We've not mentioned the fact that sole proximate cause was never disclosed at any time. There was not a factual mention of a basis for a sole proximate cause defense in disclosures. This is a creature of appeal because we lost the lawsuit. And because we're hoping that on appeal, a court will glom on to sole proximate cause as an advantageous instruction for me because I lost this lawsuit. And not because that's the way this case was tried. It is extremely frustrating as a trial lawyer to go through a trial fighting one battle and then spend your appeal for the next 2 years talking about an altogether different battle. There's not a whiff. There's more evidence about the number of elves that Santa Claus employed in 1977 in this record, or as much as there is about this cow owner, or any conduct, or any foreseeability from that particular conduct, even that got the cows to the highway.
What were the responses to your discovery about what the cause was?
It was just we didn't do it. There was nothing said. Unavoidable accident was not disclosed either, but I wasn't about to object to it because it was kind of raised by these facts. I wasn't going to have that argument on the field.
Did you ask what their theory was?
Your Honor, I sent a request for disclosure that says explain your defensive claims and theory and the factual basis, therefore. And the answer never mentioned a calendar. Never mentioned a calendar. And never mentioned sole proximate cause. Never mentioned unavoidable accident for that matter. But like I said, as a plaintiff's lawyer, in a situation like this, objecting to something like that, if there's any hint that it might be justified is certain suicide, or you feel like it is. So we let that go because there was kind of an argument that the cows caused the first accident. There's a clear argument that the cows couldn't have anything to do with the second accident. You know, Belle v. Campbell and Union Pump and a number of this court's decisions make it clear as a bell that proximate cause does not go forever. Second accident, third accident, fourth accident, disappointment the next day. Proximate cause is a tough concept. This court has said there is a limit to proximate cause, to foreseeability and cause and fact. And that limit stops before a second accident after the forces from the first have come to rest.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes today's arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Honorable.